Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today, coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. I'm a homeschool father of five. Dave's also in studio with us today. And we're going to take a look at a couple news stories that tie into a biblical perspective on things. We want to get to a scriptural approach to how we handle issues, because it's best to be rooted and grounded in the truths of God's Word, especially when you're up against a postmodern relativistic age where there is no ethic, there is no absolute, there's nothing's right and wrong. Nothing is right and wrong. There's a lot of people with big opinions that get mad at you. I know that. I know there's people with big fat opinions that get mad at you. But the bottom line is, with all of them, there's no right and wrong. So we're saying, though, that there is right and wrong. And you have to find right and wrong in the Bible, in God's revealed word, or you don't get it. If there isn't an absolute, then there is no right and wrong. So anyway, here's what's happening in Colorado. We're going to look at what's happening in the United States as well. But first in Colorado, there's a bill, and there have been bills related to crimes against pregnant women. And this is a new one. HB 13-1154 has the best shot at making it through in the Colorado Senate and House. HB 13-1154 is crimes against a pregnant woman. And this act is sponsored by the Democrats. Okay, they tried one by the Republicans. The Republicans wanted to preserve the life of little women and big women. Now, this one is crimes against big women, okay? Not little women, but big women. So the stature, I think, plays a part in this.
So this would be the women that Mary Louise Alcott did not write about.
Right.
She wrote about the little women.
The little women. This would be the big women.
This would be the larger.
The larger women.
Are we talking rotund? Or are we talking?
Just in terms of size. Because here is the key part of HB 13-1154. Nothing in this act shall be construed to confer personhood or any rights associated with that status on a human being at any time prior to live birth. So in other words, this is all about crimes against women who are, you know, out of the womb, and they have some stature to them.
So if the woman is in the womb,
that's right,
free to suck the brains out.
That's right. Right. Nothing in this act shall be construed to confer personhood and any rights associated with that status on a human being at any time prior to live birth. Additionally, nothing to this act should be construed to permit the imposition of criminal penalties against a woman for action she takes that results in the termination of pregnancy. In other words, if she kills a baby, you know, that's okay. It's okay. So we've got something here in Colorado, and Dave, you know, I thought there were laws against crimes against women. You know, if somebody got shot, if a woman was killed, I thought that that the guy would hang on Saturday. I mean, I thought that there were laws against people who kill people. For example, people who attack people, people who run into somebody in a negligent way in the parking lot at Walmart and kill somebody. I thought that, well, biblical law requires some form of execution if somebody willfully or even in gross negligence destroyed the life of another person. I thought there were laws already against that kind of thing.
I thought at the federal level we had something called the Equal Protection Clause, which is one of the amendments, if I'm not mistaken, which would mean that women and men were to share equal protection under the law.
Under the law, yeah.
So that a law that applied to a man ought to apply to a woman, and you know, in terms of like shootings.
Is everybody getting their own law?
Well, I'm thinking that now that Congress is passing this law, this Violence Against Women Act,
mm-hmm.
I think it's actually Anti-Violence Against Women Act. At least I hope it is.
Right.
That I want one.
Dave wants one.
Well,
crimes against Dave.
I think if women are going to be given particularly special class, protected mm-hmm. class, I'd like to be in a protected class. I think.
Mm-hmm. So maybe a Crimes Against Dave Act.
Or all people named Dave.
Or everybody named Dave.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
so you get some special protection under the law.
Because there might have been some guy named Dave who was assaulted.
Yeah.
And it was horrible.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be assaulted just because I'm named Dave.
Yeah, that wouldn't be nice.
No.
Okay, so it just seems odd to me, the special protection going on. It just seems odd. Anyway, biblically speaking, again, applying a biblical worldview, these kinds of things, somebody murders a woman, they ought to hang. They ought to be executed. If a man should shed man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. That's you're going to find that in Genesis 9 and verse 6. And you're going to find it throughout Scripture. Even Paul affirms the death penalty. So friends, the death penalty really ought to be applied for murder. And oh, by the way, Colorado hasn't done that, hasn't followed through on the most basic biblical law for at least 12 years now. So as far as I know, Colorado really has been completely negligent at applying any form of biblical law whatsoever. I'm not exactly sure what they do with the $6 billion they spend every year, but they're not actually applying biblical law and doing the thing that the civil magistrate really ought to be doing. They're doing everything probably that the civil magistrate should not be doing and not really applying biblical law in situations where innocent blood is shed. And Dave, it is interesting that they exempt themselves from going after people who kill little babies, little girls or little boys. They just do not want to infringe on the murder of babies in the womb. Just that is a sacrosanct, that's a sacrament to the liberals.
Kevin, in their language, preserving the life of the child is part of the war against women.
Yeah.
That they think that is against them to protect life, even if the life was a little baby woman.
Yeah. It's very, very important. My son asked me, Dad, what's the connection between abortion and feminism? I think there's some kind of a connection there, isn't there? And I got to thinking about it because I got to think about Gloria Steinem. Remember Gloria Steinem? She was a very famous feminist, probably the arch feminist, the spokesperson for all the feminists in America, and probably even for Christian feminists, because I get a lot of Christian feminists that write into me, Dave. And they call themselves Christians. They love Jesus, whoever that is. And they just don't like the show. And they call themselves Christian feminists. And so, you know, I'm looking for what is feminism, because that's pretty important. And the major spokesperson for feminism, at least in the 1970s and 1980s, was Gloria Steinem. So here is really where she really boils it down. She says, okay, now this is what we're all about. Okay, so if you want to know what feminism is all about, you Christian feminists, this is what Gloria Steinem, anyway, says that feminism is all about. The liberated woman has sex before marriage and a job after. Okay? That's the definition of the liberated woman by Gloria Steinem, who is the arch feminist. I mean, she's the one behind Ms. Magazine. She's the one who is really leading the charge, at least in the recent generation of feminists. Perhaps not in the 18th century, 19th century feminists, but certainly among those who have been raised over the last 30 to 40 years. Gloria Steinem was leading the pack in the 70s and 80s. Now, again, this is what it is. The liberated woman has sex before marriage and a job after. And the point being that she is independent and she's not tied down by children, and she can somehow make it. And at one point, the men were more independent. If they impregnated a woman, the men were more independent. They could fly the coop and they wouldn't have to worry about it. And women felt the obligation to take care of the children. And so now with a birth control pill, with the abortifacient birth control pill and abortion, a woman really begins to feel her independence and liberation. She's liberated to have sex before marriage, and she's also liberated to have a job after, which means that there's no need to worry about her husband if they get divorced, and she's probably going to push for a divorce at some point. There's always the job, the independent career job, to take care of her should that happen. So, Dave, I think, you know, these things are sort of all tied together. The destruction of the family economy, the job versus the family economy, the idea that you're never going to be tied down to a husband, you'll never have to respect him, you'll never have to submit to him, and you don't have to depend on him to provide for the material well-being of the home, as dictated in 1 Timothy 5:8, for example, if you are interested in using the Bible for conversations like this. And also, there's no real need to be tied down to a relationship as long as you have the abortifacients and the birth control pills.
Well, let's look at the culture, shall we? If a woman wants to get married, she can get married, right? And she can have sex before. There's children as a result of that marriage union. She no longer likes her husband. She tells the court, I no longer like my husband. I want him to go away. By the way, I still want to be provided for. He loses custody of the children. He has to pay for the wages of that marriage. And one of the objectives of feminism marches on the destruction of marriage and family.
Yep, exactly. So all these things are components, friends. They all sort of fit in. And if you turn to the feminists, say, you know, you can't have abortion. You can't have that. Or we're going to kind of threaten the abortifacients. You know, if there's abortifacients involved in the birth control, you know, we're going to threaten that. They're going to get, you just explode, and you're taking away the most basic rights to kill their babies and remain independent. And friends, again, remember that these are the hallmarks. These are the sacraments. They're hanging on to these for dear life. That's why they're going to write this into bills like the Colorado Crimes Against Pregnant Women bills. They're going to make sure that women have the right to kill little babies in the womb. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment to talk more about feminist issues. This is Kevin Swanson, Dave also in studio.
And every year. Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring two conferences, one in Washington State and the other in St. Louis, Missouri. For families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy, this is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business streams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, farming panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including free-range farmer Joel Salatin, entrepreneur Eric Weir, and Kevin Swanson. Join us for our four-day mega conference in St. Louis or the two-day fall conference in Olympia, Washington. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com.
And we are back in the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, Mike Side with you. Dave Olson in studio. And friends, here's a sad story from the New York Times. This woman attacked at 19 by an Air Force trainer and speaking out. Lackland rape victim talks of ordeal. After her Air Force training instructor raped her, a young recruit, he told her it was fun, they should do it again, she remembers. Then he threw her things at her and so forth and so on. So, a pretty sad story over here. But, friends, here's the shocking thing in this story. And we've referred to these stories off and on. Because we want to take a look at the fruits of our systems and what we've done with our gender distinctions and gender egalitarianism. Ms. Mezik, now 21 years of age, is one of the 62 trainees identified as victims of assault or other improper conduct by 32 training instructors between 2009 and 2012 at Lackland. Dave, I mean, when I read that, I thought 32 training instructors, 62 trainees. I mean, this is what's going on. And again, remember, we're mixing men and women right smack in the middle of, and it's an experiment. I mean, they're giving it a shot. In history, friends, we haven't seen a lot of this mixing of men and women in the military, and they're doing it. They're doing it all over the place. And you do this, what's going to happen to society? I know it's an experiment, and our society wants to do this experiment. The progressives are so excited for the first time in human history. We are making history here, friends. We're doing something very, very strange where we're placing men and women on an egalitarian basis in combat, and we're going to expect the very same thing of both of them. They will act the same way. They will compete on the same basis, and it is a dog-eat-dog world out there, friends. The sexes are in competition. It's just survival of the fittest now. Egalitarianism is pitting one sex against the other. There's no defense of the weaker vessel. There's precious little respect for the weaker vessel. And, of course, even using the words weaker vessel, which is what I think Peter uses in 1 Peter in the Bible, you find Peter referring to us rendering respect, rendering honor to the weaker vessel. That's important. That's especially important for the husband because he's speaking to the husband there. But there is that respect that ought to be paid to the weaker vessel as defined by the Apostle Peter himself. And I know that Apostle Peter standing up against Karl Marx and all the egalitarian force of the last 200 years is a difficult competition. That what does the fisherman know about marriage? What does the fisherman know about everything? But it's ultimately the revelation of Almighty God, friends, and we need to take this as God's definition of men and women and the responsibilities on the part of men and women. And Dave, chivalry is breaking down. I mean, if you've got 32 training instructors, and we don't know exactly what level of assault. I mean, it may be rape. It may be something less than that. But there is a fair amount of assault going on at Lackland, according to this article from the New York Times. And 62 trainees are involved. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's not a lot of chivalry.
That is a lot, and it's frightening. But let's look at the principles behind it. You're talking about basic training. Basic training. The trainees are assaulted.
Yeah.
Whether it be sexually or non-sexually, they're going to be assaulted.
Right.
Sexuality has become a weapon in the war of the sexes. Mm-hmm. Both sides wield it, by the way. It's not exclusive to just the feminists or just the women. Mm-hmm. Wives, you know, for ages, we've heard about men who are in the proverbial doghouse. Mm-hmm. That's sexuality being used as a weapon against the husband, something the Bible says ought not happen, by the way. What we have then is sexuality in an environment in which assault is going to happen, in which sexuality is a weapon, then you're going to have sexual assault.
It's an evolutionary dog-eat-dog survival of the fittest deal. You put sexuality into that. That's what the dogs do. That's what the animals are doing. They're always kind of competing with each other, and it's there's no respect there. There's no sense that we are created in the image of God and ought to respect each other according to the laws of God. People have pretty much jettisoned all of that. There's no basic reason why people feel like they need to respect each other in our society where there is no God and there is no law and we do whatever we want. And we've been told that we're just cosmic dust and we are evolving in a survival of the fittest mode from one species to the next. And it is blood and tooth and claw, baby. It's get out there, survival of the fittest. And Dave, between the men and the women, there isn't that sense of complementarianism that ought to happen within the marriage. Rather, it's just raw competition and manipulation.
Yeah, Kevin, what happened? We got to go back all the way to the beginning. We got to go back to the garden. Eve was created to be Adam's helper in a dominion task. Adam was given the obligation, the duty, the mission to take dominion over the world. He needed help. God gave him a helper, Eve. At the fall, there is the curse of Eve. So Eve is created as a helper. Adam first. This is very important, especially in Paul's theology. But after the fall, there's a curse given to Eve, and she doesn't like this curse. She doesn't like it at all. It says that her heart is going to be for her husband, and we understand it to be her husband's role, and he's going to rule over her. Now, feminism says you don't need to be a helper. Get out from underneath your created purpose. Don't be a person under authority. Don't let anyone rule over you. Be individual.
And except for 16 layers of corporate bosses, Barack Obama, right. And the entire bureaucracy of the United States government, and 70% of the gross national income controlled by government. Outside of that slave-based system, you're free.
Right. You're free from...
You're free, baby.
You're free from your misogynist men.
Yeah.
Rather than becoming unified, and the example that's a good example is an axe head and an axe handle. Well, what good is the axe head without the axe handle? It's hard to cut down trees. It's purpose for the axe head without a handle giving it some leverage. On the other hand, you take an axe handle without an axe head, and you have a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very good at doing it. You can whack the tree. You're not going to do very much. So the Bible actually talks about taking the axe head and the axe handle and joining them together and making the two one, and in which there's leverage and there's power and there's hardness, and they all work together, and we call that a family.
And that forms the basis of the family economy.
The family economy.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose, to go take dominion, to propagate the species and create more little axe heads and little more axe handles that can join together and make new families and take even more dominion. Feminism wants to separate the axe head from the axe handle and make them, rather than complements to each other that, for the same purpose, make them competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once you start competing with each other, the bad men are going to look at the women as competitors, and they're going to dog-eat-dog world, like you said. They're going to do what it takes. It's a tough world out there.
Yep.
And the women, and by the way, we call those misogynists, and the women, they're going to view the men as competitors, and they're going to become... those misandrists, which is the opposite version of the hatred of men. But what's lost? Well, the beauty, the unity, the family solidarity of a husband and a wife, two becoming one, of the picture of Christ and his church is completely lost and obliterated in that picture.
And you get total dysfunctionality. Total dysfunctionality, friends. And you get it everywhere now.
Kevin, you asked about chivalry.
Terrible. Let's talk about chivalry for a little bit. I mean, whatever's happening at the Air Force Academy or whatever's happening here is not chivalry. Can you say that?
Well,
it's just not chivalry.
It isn't.
This isn't chivalry.
No.
Whatever this guy did to this poor lady is not chivalry.
He did not be chivalrous. He did not treat her.
Right.
And honor her as a weaker vessel worthy of protection.
And there's just not a lot of chivalry out there. I gave this story a while back. I've been reading the history of American outlaws. And, Dave, in the 1880s, there was a rape in Missouri.
One.
In the 1880s. Yes,
and singular.
That actually became known. And it was just horrifying. And the outlaws, okay, the outlaws teamed up to find the guy.
This is the
scum of society. Right. At that time, the outlaws ganged up and they said, we're going to find the guy who did the dirty deed. Okay, that's the level of chivalry that existed with the outlaws in the 1880s in Missouri. We're talking about the Jesse James gang and the Cole Younger gang and all the others. You know, they were very upset because you didn't handle women that way. You didn't treat them that way. And during the war, Dave, I mean, some of these guerrilla bands were some of the worst. They're pretty violent, and they're pretty edgy. I mean, they were borderline outlaws. And they made it into a town in Kansas and pretty much took the entire town down, killed almost every one of the men, but didn't touch a woman or child. Didn't even scratch them. That was the point. And, of course, the North was very upset with it. They didn't play fair. This is the way that the North looked at this. And so these guerrillas were not favored by very many people. Even the South was somewhat disappointed with the actions taken by some of these guerrilla bands. The point being that in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s, there was a humongous of respect paid for women. You did not, unless you were the scum of the scum of the scum of the scum of the earth, you did not touch these women in a dishonorable way. You didn't do it. Now, it happens at the Air Force academies. It happens in basic training, where chivalry was supposed to be the name of the game. Shame on our military. Shame on our military. A million shames upon our military that creates this scenario. And granted, I think it's rooted in the whole egalitarian gender blender thing. I think, Dave, that's a huge element. Of course, it's the fact that you've got people watching the violent media and there's no ethics and, you know, there's no character left in the nation. There's a lot of other issues related to this, but friends, we're in trouble. We are so far from a chivalrous perspective towards women. Dave, I mean, you hardly find men willing to hold a door open for women anymore.
That's right. You do. Off air, I told you this story. I don't know if it's true or not, but it illustrates the point. There's a man who entering a store, opens the door for a woman, and the woman's a little bit offended, and she says, "I can do that myself. Why are you doing this?" And he says, "Well, because my mother told me gentlemen always open doors for ladies." And she responded, "I'm no lady." And he says, "Yes, but I'm a gentleman."
Yeah, so he's still hanging on to some little aspect of chivalry, even though the woman would rather be treated like, well, I guess,
whatever,
the dog-eat-dog world we just talked about.
Right. Chivalry was rooted in the medieval knights, and it was a code of conduct, a code of honor. By the way, they have an honor code down at the academies and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Rooted in the old order of knights and such, but we're losing the idea of chivalry with women.
Well,
how we treat and honor women, because the issue is honor. The issue is honor.
Right.
It seems to me that the feminists purportedly set out to try to capture more honor, but in the end,
they destroyed honor.
They destroyed it.
They destroyed honor in two different directions.
Right.
Look, the code of chivalry, at least as reported, what documents we have, I'll bring from the Song of Roland, which is a Middle Age document, begins with the fear of God and to maintain his church. So
really,
chivalry is rooted foundationally on the fear of God. So
big, big surprise.
Yeah, big surprise, you know, to keep the faith. Just a couple points here. It's to preserve the weak and to respect the honor of women.
Wow.
Not of a woman, but mm-hmm. of women.
Right.
And this is based in 1 Peter 3, that the husband is to honor the woman as the weaker vessel. Not mm-hmm. not because she is a weaker vessel, but to honor her as a weaker vessel. Now, the way that I would look at this, Kevin, is she is a vase
mm-hmm.
that is incredibly beautiful and
a
yet
great
somewhat
value.
Fragile.
A great value.
Right.
A great value. Very precious, very valuable.
Very valuable.
Yeah.
The beauty may not be obvious to all,
mm-hmm.
But it's of great value. It's one of a kind. You know, the museums would love to have this vase in their collection. It needs to be protected. Yeah. Now, it may be made of brass. It may be made of gold. It may be made of iron. But it still needs to be protected. And the husband's role, at least in relationship to this vase, is to protect it.
Dave, we have to train our sons to be chivalrous. We have to train them to leave the door open, to pull the chair back and help a lady into her chair. We have to train our boys to be mannerly and provide that extra honor when they're in the presence of their sisters. Even I know within the family sometimes, boys want to kind of slap around their sisters like and do it sometimes with their words, like they would with a boy, you know, mm-hmm. where you numbskull this, you numbskull that, you know, and they're kind of boxing ears, and they want to do that to their sisters. I think early on we need to train our boys not to do that kind of thing and to treat their sisters with a special degree of honor Dave, and let me ask you this, though. We don't have too many minutes left on this particular segment of Generations, but how do we train our daughters in the area of self-defense? And this is one thing that, because here's the deal. The bottom line is there's not going to be a lot of chivalry out there. I think we just have to understand that. Our world, there's probably 0.002% of the population tuning into our program and learning about chivalry today. And of that X percent are saying, hey, that's a great idea. I'd love to train my boys to be a little more chivalrous and honor their sisters. So, you know, you have a very, very, very few percent that are really trained in this way. And a lot of boys are sitting there watching pornography all day long and learning how to dishonor women in that form, and probably creating a society that's going to be a lot more risky for our daughters in the years to come. I mean, it's just that's the society that we have been born into. It's terrible. It's dreadful. It's dangerous. It's going to be dangerous for our daughters. So I guess the question, Dave, is do we train our daughters in the area of self-defense? That's bothering me a little bit. Because on the one hand, I don't want our daughters to see this as normative, that it's normative to be in the gender blender. It's normative for them to be out for number one and to be out there fighting boys and fighting men and be in competition with men. So I don't want that. So it's not normative that they're involved. But you do have the example of Deborah and Yael, who, when an enemy general made it into her tent, remember that? She gave him a glass of milk, and then she pounded a nail through his temples into the floor of the tent. So I think there is a role for training our daughters to pound nails into the heads of enemy generals if they happen to make it, you know, into the tent, and it's a dangerous situation. They need to defend their household. I think it is important to teach our daughters how to shoot and how to shoot well. My daughters, you know, all shoot well. But, again, I'm trying to draw a distinction between normative and exceptional. I mean, there's an exception. I'm training them in the meek and quiet spirit. I think that's important. That's 97% of the training, but there's a 3% of the training, and it involves being a good shot with a 30-30.
or whatever your choice of caliber is. Look, there's some principles that we can take. It was a very dangerous time for women at the time of the New Testament.
Yeah.
It was a very dangerous time in Rome. It was a very dangerous time in Asia Minor. The principles that were applied there, and some of them are helpful, women rarely traveled alone. So there was protection. They were together. You know, some of the Old Testament laws concerning rape, for instance, applied differently if a woman was alone than with somebody was with her.
Yeah.
So there's a witness. So you want to try and keep your daughter from being alone. So you're not going to send her off to college alone.
We call it a system of accountability. Even when my daughters are doing things outdoors, there's a system of accountability going on. We call it accountability.
And by the way, it's good for sons too. It's good that sons not have too much time alone.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own kinds of trouble they can get into. So first off, we want to take some prudent measures to keep them out of trouble, to prevent the situations. We're not going to send our daughters alone, especially on a Saturday night to a bar. You know, there's a pickup bar. Well, there's nothing good that's going to come out of that.
Right.
I don't care if they're putting out gospel tracts. Yeah. There's nothing good going to come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to avoid those situations. Secondly, in the Bible, we see situations in which a woman defends her home.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not defending the borders.
Mm-hmm.
She's not part of the muster of men to go defend the borders. If some perpetrator makes it into the home, she has a duty and an obligation to protect that home. Maybe her husband's away. Maybe he's incapacitated at that point.
Yeah.
Well, then it falls to her. So what should she do? Well, in this modern age, she should probably be fairly good with an arm. And by that, I mean a gun, not a whistle.
Beyond whistles now.
In Colorado, Senator Congress, I forgot which, who said that women just need to have a whistle, which I'm thinking that, you know, maybe the guy played basketball and you could blow the whistle and call a timeout. Maybe that'd be respected. I'm guessing the gun would work better.
Yeah.
Because that would stop him.
Sure.
So, you know, in my house is armed.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you how many firearms, but it's plural.
Sure.
And my wife and I are planning right now to do a little more firearms training coming up very quickly here.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my daughters are not allowed to carry firearms in the state of Colorado while they're minors. I think that's an infringement,
but
that's the law. We have to respect it. So I want to make sure that my daughters, my beautiful, precious daughters are not ever put in a situation where there isn't a male protector.
Mm-hmm.
That's my application. So my son,
do you think it's possible to train your daughters to in an area of self-production and still be maintaining the normative idea that God has for our daughters, that they not be the grappling, manipulating, you know, girls, but have a meek and quiet spirit and are able to submit themselves to their own husbands.
Well, Kevin, this is a difficult task because the Tomb Raider influence.
Yeah.
And I'll just use that as a general name for it. Tomb Raider has Laura Croft, a woman, you started out as a video.
Never seen the video, but.
But you've probably seen pictures.
I think I've seen them, yeah.
Yeah, where Laura Croft is essentially a very beautiful, sexy type, provocative woman who goes and has male adventures, who carries a firearm on her hip or thigh, and she's out shooting and doing all these adventures and doing the kinds of things that Indiana Jones might be doing.
Or used to do.
Yeah, when he was younger.
Yeah.
But see, if that's the influence, if that's what she believes is biblical femininity, she's got the picture wrong. It's not the meek and quiet spirit. It's not an inner beauty. It's not the Proverbs 31 woman. She's pursuing the Hollywood seductress, adventurous woman, not the woman who's content to be at home.
Mm-hmm.
This is the woman whose feet are always moving from home.
Yeah. So again, friends, all things in balance, all things in priorities. And I think that's what we're saying on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. Train your daughters to some self-defense if necessary, but also train them with the biblical vision in mind for biblical womanhood. Please keep the vision in mind. You think that Gloria Steinem has pretty much nailed the vision? You really think the egalitarians, the Marxists, the feminists have pretty much identified the vision? Is whatever they're doing at the Air Force Academy the vision for manhood and womanhood? I don't think so. Pretty much abandon that. Go back to the Bible. The Bible's got the standards, especially the book of Proverbs. And let me recommend to you our Proverbs Bible study guides available on our website. We also have a little workbook now that comes along with it for 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. Teach your children the standards for what it is to be a man of God, what it is to be a woman of God. And you're going to find that really neatly synopsized in the book of Proverbs. God's book of wisdom has been around for 3,000 years, a little longer than Gloria Steinem. And I would say way more wisdom than Gloria Steinem ever had. Okay, friends, get the Book of Wisdom. Get our Proverbs Bible Study Guides and the little workbook for kids at our website, kevinswanson.com. And this is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.